Well, every now and then I get a great chance to have a great guy join us. You're in for a real treat. Thank you for tuning in. Tom is here, and Tom's going to be able to hear his piano in just moments. There it is. No, not there yet. Hang on. There it is. Now he's got it.
Hey.
That's all sorts of different ways to make things easy. We have this fiddle here for you to listen to as we fiddle around. Let me know, how's the volume there? Are you okay? Ah, it's killing him.
No, that's good, Larry.
You're actually getting good on mime. He's been hanging around Dan Kamen a lot lately. Dan Kamen, a longtime listener to SLB, and Dan is going to be here along with Tom next month, the two of them together. But this morning we have Tom, who's just down the street, and he probably walked over, I'm guessing.
I did walk over.
How is it out there?
It's snowing.
It is.
It's snowing, and it's not bad. It's snowing. It's not like it's like 5 feet of snow out there.
Yeah.
It's snowing.
It's winter.
It's winter. Get used to it, folks.
It's winter. How's Harry?
Harry.
To the Harry the dog, monopoetically named. How does he like this weather?
Well, when it gets this cold, he just like cuddles up in the bed and says, "I'm not going out. No way, not going out." But he likes it. You know, most of the dogs in the neighborhood. Northside's a big dog neighborhood.
It
Most
is.
Of the dogs just go bananas with this weather.
Oh, they love it. And Gracie the cat, her basic MO is she lies in front of the registers on the furnace, for the furnace. She'll just lie in front of them and block the heat from whatever room you happen to be in.
I do exactly the same thing.
Yeah. If you're going to get heat, it's going to be through Gracie first, unless you kind of encourage her not to do that, which isn't so easy. Tom, I mentioned Dan, who is a renowned actor and expert on the movements of Charlie Chaplin. He is probably the world's expert on Charlie Chaplin's movements. Has collaborated in a project with Tom Roberts. Tom is a great composer and also channeler of old arrangements from legendary musicians. And Tom's talents were applied to create a new soundtrack for the Pawn Shop. And I can't remember, did the Pawn Shop have a soundtrack? Or would people just play whatever they felt like playing?
We're still not entirely sure what there would have been. This is the interesting thing about Chaplin films. Chaplin himself was a great composer. He was a spectacular composer. And as soon as he was able to create his own soundtracks, he did so. If you were to go to a silent movie place, pardon me, depending upon how opulent the palace, the movie palace was, if it was a big multiple seat place, there would have been a small orchestra there. A lot of these movie palaces would have actually a symphony orchestra, and the music that would have been created for these things would have been literally generic music for silent films. There's a big business of people who would compose music. Guy from Pittsburgh, well, he was in the Pittsburgh Symphony at one point. His name was Zemechnik, and he was very prolific in creating what would be generic silent movie music, like hurry music. Those sorts of things. Just like, oh, play this whenever there's someone being tied to a railroad track and being chased around. And there would have been all this different music.
Kind of like the organist at a baseball game.
Exactly.
Right? You would choreograph, but I guess audiograph what's happening by adding sound to it and trying to get the crowd jazzed up or to amplify the movie a little bit.
Very good. Very good analogy there. That's good. So what Chaplin noticed was, you know, the music, whenever you're doing silent film, the music is every bit a part of what your experience as an audience member is. Pardon me. And one of the things that when he started composing for his films, he makes the comment of he couldn't get these music arrangers to realize that if the music was funny, the movie wasn't anymore. And there's a great example. We were watching a Chaplin film at Jerry's Records with Willie Weber and the guys in the 78 shop, and it was The Rounders, Chaplin and Arbuckle. And normally this thing has me screaming. It's hysterical. But the music that they had playing for this film was ragtime, which would have been appropriate, time appropriate. It was the Paragon Ragtime Orchestra, spectacular orchestra. I've recorded with them. But because it was so buoyant and fast and happy, no one laughed at it. Now, there's another version of the Rounders in which there's this very delicate music of something like that, very, very delicate, gentle stuff. And everyone is in hysterics when they hear it because it needs to be that – it's the irony of like the scene in The Gold Rush where he's cooking the shoe and they're serving the shoe. If the music was funny during that, you really wouldn't laugh at it. But because it's very elegant, as if you're at a very posh London restaurant with a string orchestra playing in the background, it creates the irony, the subconscious irony of what you're seeing on the screen.
It's very subtle, isn't it? Is you know, I think a lot about, you know, you see a beautiful room that's just absolutely gorgeous, and maybe it's got fabric on the walls, you know, it's sort of like opulent wallpaper and carpets and works of art and interesting furniture. And you begin to take one thing away at a time. And when does that room cease to be beautiful? As you take away one thing at a time. And sometimes, you know, or you can begin adding one thing at a time. And when does it become beautiful? And when is it too much? And too much really can ruin it, right? Because
absolutely,
the music begins to overshadow what the movie is and even competes with the movie in
and
some
it should
case.
Never compete. And Chaplin was adamant about saying, I do not want to compete with the music. And so the greatest model of things that we can use to gauge an idea of what's a perfect score is to watch some of Chaplin things, such as City Lights. Even the latter day things that he did, he took some of his earlier films that he did for First National, A Dog's Life, The Kid, Payday, all of these 1918 films and composed music for them. The ones that he did not compose music for were the ones that he did not own. And he did not own anything before 1918, which is very lucky for us as composers because we are free to use these things. And about 2 years ago, Dan, when I first met Dan, he commissioned me, asked me, hey, I do a show with the pawn shop. Could you write some music for this? And he's actually restored this film. I want to tell you a little bit about the series of which this is not an isolated event. This is a series at the Hollywood Theater that's called Silence, Please. And it is funded in part by a seed award from the Sprout Foundation. This is the third event in the series. We had Daryl Fleming playing the first. He did a Louise Brooks film. Ben Opie came and did some experimental films. And this is our third one. And this is our, you know, maybe it sounds egotistical, but I think this is our big event because this is also our Chaplin 100th anniversary. Not only will you see The Pawn Shop, you will see Chaplin's first appearance on screen as The Tramp from 1914, which I think was released approximately at this time. It's called Kid Auto Races. And then we will do a reprise of the two films that I've been doing for the past year, The Rink and 1 a.m., because there have been a number of people saying, I'm bringing my grandmother to see this. I'm bringing my mother to see this. Are you going to do these?
Those are both great films.
Those are great films. And by the way, bringing your mother, bringing your grandmother, this is an event that is for everyone. This is a kid-friendly event. This is a everybody event. I've been stopped on the street by – there was this really sexy – redhead, asymmetrical haircut, tattoos on her arms. She stopped me and I went, what the heck? Why this girl, why does she want to talk to me? And she said, I was at your Chaplin event at Bar Margo. It was magical. So this is something, this is not a, something of historical interest. This is something that is a vibrant, living thing. And it appeals to kids. It appeals to senior citizens. It appeals to 20-something hipsters. It appeals to everyone, and it does. It has the same effect that it did 100 years ago. Everyone sees it, and they are transported into something different. They're in a brand new world, which is kind of what a lot of Chaplin's films do. You're in a new world.
A lot of people, too. When you watch Chaplin in a more focused way, as you will when he's on the big screen at the Hollywood Theater tomorrow and Dorman too, you really start to recognize how incredibly ingenious this man was. The movements, the manner in which the actual plot elements of these films were put together. This is not a case of just a shtick or slapstick that was thrown together without a lot of forethought. These are incredibly...
They're complex. There's multiple layers.
They're deceivingly simple.
There are multiple layers of meaning within this. You can enjoy it on a surface level. You can get deep behind it, which is a lot of the things that I tried to do with creating scores for these films, particularly The Pawn Shop. When I had worked on the first films, it took me – I'd make the gag. It wasn't too much of a gag, though. Probably for every 30 seconds, it took about 17 hours to write it. Now that I know what I'm doing, it probably takes me 2 weeks to do 8 seconds. But those 8 seconds are exactly what it should sound like.
Huh. 2 weeks?
For eight seconds. And when you hear it, it doesn't sound like anything. You were like, what, that's it? That took 2 weeks? But it should appear as if it's nothing. And the same thing is true of Chaplin's working process with creating these films. He would rehearse these things 90 times. He would do hundreds and hundreds of takes of the very same thing to create the perfection that you see on the screen that seems as if it's being improvised at the moment.
Now, I would think that tempo is perhaps more important than melody as you try to figure out how to match. Can you sort of explain what goes through your head when you're composing?
All right, I'm going to give you guys a few because we're going to – when Dan comes on, we're going to discuss the same thing.
Yeah, and we're going to do a full hour together. Right. We just wanted to sneak in.
Yeah, but I want to get – and this is also to get – folks, when you come tomorrow – and you're going to come tomorrow – you're going to see the premiere of not only a film with restoration that has scenes that have not been seen since 1916, but you're going to hear music that has been especially composed for this. And this is the first time it'll be heard. Now, what I try to do is when I compose for these things, particularly this one, I try to find underlying meaning behind it. I'll sit down and I'll watch the film and I'll create a script. I'll write my own script for it. And so I try to create themes for each individual character that would have some sort of link with one another. And that takes a lot of time thinking about it. So Henry Bergman, one of Chaplin's right-hand man, plays a Jewish pawnbroker in this. The characters are Chaplin is the new pawn shop employee. Henry Bergman is the pawnbroker. Edna Purviance as the pawnbroker's super fine daughter. John Rand is the bookkeeper for the place. And it's all the actions that happen between these guys. So, Bergman's character is obviously Jewish. And so the thought that I had was, well, we need to have a little klezmer-y kind of thing. And of course, it's much longer than that. But the idea behind this is, the link that I've made compositionally is that there is a motion, these half-step motions in between it. Now, Charlie's theme, Charlie is free of time. Charlie is free of worry. Charlie's character is kind of like the dude in The Big Lebowski. He's the dude of 1914, Saint Charlie. And so Charlie's theme takes that same idea of these melodic phrases, except it becomes major. So instead of Charlie's theme is, – And if I can take these ideas and use a tiny little seed of each melodic idea, there becomes a link of continuity throughout this film. So subconsciously, you sense all of these things. When he's fighting with his other employee, it's... And again, you have the... You have those same little melodic fragments that create, you probably don't even notice it, but subconsciously, which is where our dreams take place, and watching a silent film is like being in a dream.
Yeah, and you know, listening to what you're playing, it sounds like we've just reached back in the time and have found something that was... contemporaneous with the film. And just as the film appeals to contemporary eyes, the music does to today's ears. It's really tricky. I can see why it would take so long to achieve exactly what you want. Did you get frustrated at all?
No, you know what?
You don't strike me as somebody that would easily get frustrated.
I don't get frustrated. No, it was a great experience. I mean, it's... You look at this thing. You know what it's like? It's like doing – you guys love puzzles here. It's like doing a Sudoku puzzle.
Right.
Because you look at this thing. It's like, how the heck am I going to discover all of these missing things? Well, you make one little discovery, and as you make that discovery, it will lead you to new things. And as I finished up this score – and literally it's been about a year and a half I've been working on this thing. And I finished it up the last few minutes of the film this past week. And within it, I was able to make these discoveries of like, oh, stuff that has happened before can be used again. Like, here's a little tune whenever Charlie is sneaking behind a cop. Oops.
You begin to realize, too, when you hear these themes and this continuity, when you hear a particular lilt or a particular rhythm, you know that something is about to happen, or maybe not. Do you have to be careful not to...
Give it away? Absolutely not. You can't give it away, and you also have to create foreshadowing... Finding little bits of themes of something that will, again, it's subconscious.
I was going to ask you if foreshadowing is allowed or not, because in most films, and maybe it's just my audio centricity, but I tend to notice most films as they move from scene to scene, you hear the sound from the upcoming scene a little bit earlier than the picture comes in. And
not necessarily in this situation. Yeah. By foreshadowing, what I mean is using a theme that will be used later on. And it's going to be a surprise because I don't want to give away some stuff.
So you're sort of planning an antecedent that you're later going to come
Absolutely.
Back.
Absolutely. There's an ongoing theme within this that is very – it's also very dude-like, where he's a dude from The Big Lebowski – where Charlie is free of time. He lives in his own sense of time, and so there are clocks that happen throughout this. When Charlie walks into the pawn shop, the pawnbroker says, "You're late." Charlie looks at his watch and compares it against a calendar. I'm not late. There's many moments when he falls, and the first thing he does is he checks this watch. He checks his watch. Why is he checking this watch? He's checking this watch because his sense of time is a different time than everyone else's. So if I can create a little theme, oh, there's the ticking of the little clock in there, and that becomes... And if he can use these ideas just as brief little snippets that will build up to a later part where Charlie basically... disassembles an alarm clock, the thing that wakes you up in the morning, the thing that takes you out of your dream. Now, a lot of these ideas are Dan's ideas, and I could not have come up with a score that has the intellectual complexity and also the emotional complexity without giving him a call every now and then, just saying, all right, Dan, what do you think this means? What do you mean? What do you think he means by this little section? And we would sit and we would discuss it. And there's many times where I had my theories, and it turns out that was his theory as well. And sometimes mm-hmm. I was a little bit off. But to do this collaboration with not only Dan's input as to and him teaching me how this is, but also to do a little collaboration with someone who's not alive anymore. The limitations within the film, there are times that you have to do things and you have to try to create something that Charlie himself would want to do. What would Charlie Chaplin do? Yeah. Yes, I'm a member of the Church of Charlie Chaplin. Cha-cha-cha.
Now, it's we just have about a minute or so now. It's tomorrow at 2 o'clock is the next program in this series, and there will be more. It's called Silence, Please. And tomorrow, the pawn shop, as well as a real audience favorite called Kid Auto Races at Venice Beach, will be screened.
And The Rink. And 1 a.m.
Oh, all four. Wow.
All four will be there. Mary Beth Malik, who plays with the Pittsburgh Opera Orchestra, will be playing clarinet on 1 a.m. and The Rink. The Kid Auto Races score is very much march-like. And then, I don't know, this pawn shop thing is like a Liszt and Rachmaninoff and Prokofiev. And it's very classical.
Ah, sounds great. Well, and look for Tom Roberts there along with Dan Kamen tomorrow at the Hollywood Theater in Dormont. And you can get additional information by going to the Hollywood Theater's website, which is a fun website, and looking under Silence, Please. Now, it's birthday time. We certainly can collaborate on birthday time if you would like.
Let's do a little birthday.
Okay. With a nickel to the sisters who wrote the song. We're about to.
Shall I funk it up?
Oh, you can do whatever you would like. There's lots of birthdays, so whenever you're ready, just go ahead.